And Joyce's presentation is on dreams and our need for story. Joyce.
Most of us are not conscious of how much our living of life depends on story. If you think about it, though, any time we get an unoccupied moment, we almost always try to fill it with a story. We watch movies for stories. We watch television for stories. Some of us still read books for stories. We follow the news to keep up with the story of our time. We watch sports to follow the stories of the teams and of the star athletes. Even as we work, we feel ourselves to be part of a story, the story of our workplace, the story of our chosen field, the story of the task we are trying to accomplish. We feel somehow that our own story depends on our contribution to these greater stories. Most of all, our relating to each other depends almost entirely on the exchange of stories. We greet each other by saying, "How was your day? How is your family? What's been going on?" When old friends meet, after not seeing each other for some time, they will say, "Let's catch up." And that means, let's catch up with our stories. Humans are unique among animals in our capacity for and our need for story. My dog, for example, does not have much of a story to tell. If we could ask him, he would only tell us the story that he is currently in. He might say, "It is my dinner time and Joyce has not noticed. I am trying to remind her." He would not add, "She does this a lot, and I have worked out some ways to handle it. I used to do it another way, but now I have learned that it works better if I do it this way instead." This longer version is part of his story, but he doesn't realize it, doesn't think about it, doesn't keep track of it. And the fact is, even the whole story of his life as I know it and could tell it is not very different from your dog's story. And so if I told you more of it, you would not find it very interesting. However, my own story of my own experience of my dog is much more interesting. The lessons I have learned from raising him and training him and adapting to him, and at a deeper level, the knowledge I have that my dog is an outside image of an inner masculine energy in me. I know, for instance, that he has to do with the writing and publishing of my natural spirituality book. His life with me has coincided with that. One of the primary ways I have kept up with this deeper level of my story of my dog is through my dreams. Those of you who have a dog and are already into dream work know what I'm talking about. If you dream about your dog, you then have to analyze the inner meaning of your dog. And so the story of your dog deepens. And when something happens to your dog in outer life, you handle it at the surface level first, but then you go to that deeper level and you ask yourself, what does it mean that this part of my life is ill or is lost or is so ready to get into a fight? Our human story does have levels like this, a surface of life level and deeper ones. I am sure that I do not know all the possible levels of the human story, but I do know three broad levels that I can name for you. First, there is the surface of life level. I call this our dinner party story. It is the only story allowed at dinner parties. If someone at a dinner party wants to know your story, you can tell them things like where you grew up, where you went to college, what you do in the work world, when you married and what your spouse does, how many children you have, what your children are doing if they are grown. If they are not grown, you can talk about what schools they go to, how many grandchildren you have and how often you get to see them. And then you can segue into where you went on your last vacation or where you are going next. All of this can be good entertainment for an hour or so. But if you are like me, it will not be very long before you are bored and stealing furtive glances at your watch. Because these stories are not very deep. And if you know the human story at the deeper level, you know what thin soup the surface of life story is. That is not to deny the fact, however, that for all people at some time in their lives, and for some people for all of their lives, the surface of life level of their story is very challenging and therefore very interesting, and it is quite enough to occupy all their human energy. But for most people, there comes a time when they need more than just the surface of life story. The next most accessible level, then, is the higher meaning level, what we might call the faith story. You don't tell your faith story at a dinner party, but you can tell it in public if you are in a faith-friendly setting. This story includes more wounds and hard times than does the dinner party story, and it includes the resultant building up of faith. The faith story definitely adds meaning to the surface of life story. It gives higher meaning to those parts of our surface of life story that cannot be reported at dinner parties because, even though they are surface of life, they are downers, they are heavy, they are stories of loss. For many people, the surface of life story and the faith story together are enough to fill their lives. But for many others, the faith story itself, once appropriated, is not enough to sustain long-term interest. We see evidence of this in the steady decline in participation in faith communities by those for whom basic survival is not a great issue. And it is attested to further by the restlessness and searching about for more by those who do not want to leave their faith communities but are not fully fed there either. These people are ready for the next level if only someone would show them how to get it. They need the depth story. Awakening to our depth story, of course, means awakening to the unconscious. Paying attention to our dreams is not the only way to relate to the unconscious, but it is our primary, most steadily available means, and it is our best avenue to this third level of our story. Note that when we go to this deeper level, we are still involved in the other two levels of our story. The surface of life story and the faith story continue to unfold, amplified by the greater awareness of the whole story that is now arising from the depths. This wholeness aspect of our depth story is very satisfying simply because it is wholeness. The most amazing thing about our depth story is that it never gets boring. And not only is it hugely interesting, but like the Energizer Bunny, it just keeps on going and going and going. A good image to help us think about our depth story is to imagine it as a fabric being woven on a loom. A woven fabric, as you know, is made up of two sets of threads. The warp is comprised of the stationary threads that are fastened lengthwise on the loom. The woof is made up of the stories that are shuttled back and forth across the warp, in and out of the threads of the warp. The warp of our depth story, the part that is stationary, is made up of the universal threads that are found in every person's story. There is a universal human story, and there are any number of lenses through which it can be viewed. A lens that I have gradually discovered over the years is one that focuses on human life in 20-year stages. 20 years is the length of a generation, and this lens uses that generational span as its basis. Now, this pattern is not altered by the fact that in one's own individual life, a generation might be longer or shorter than 20 years. Such variable threads of each person's circumstances are the woof threads that move across the stationary warp threads of the 20-year stages. The warp threads are always there beneath every individual life, no matter what threads are being woven across them. They have an effect. They are continually at work trying to bring about a major change in your life and my life every 20 years. Let me give you a fuller picture of this particular version of the universal human story. For the first 20 years of life, you are a child, and that means that you get to have your needs met by others, both your physical needs and your emotional needs. Now, put child in quotes. We are talking about a human energy value, not an outer fact. I know that there are plenty of young people under 20, some quite young, who do not, in fact, get their own needs met and who find themselves working instead to meet the needs of others. But that outer drama takes place over an inner stage of childhood that does not go away just because it is not being lived in health and wholeness. At age 20, the human energy value changes universally. From 20 to 40, we are in the parent stage. Again, put parent in quotes. This stage does not depend on outer biological parenthood. My first hint of the existence of this whole pattern of 20-year stages came to me in a dream which said in words, not images, and I quote, "It is true that your mother sought to meet her own needs rather than yours when you were a child. But now that you have reached 20 years of age, you have to give up trying to get your own needs met." End of quote. Well, first of all, I didn't know that about my mother before I had this dream. Or at least I did not know to think about it that way. But once I did think about it that way, I understood what the dream was saying. And second of all, I was 40 years old when I dreamed this dream. But the dream didn't say, "Now that you are 40. I understood it to be saying that I had to take up an attitude that my mother never took up and that I myself should have taken up 20 years earlier. From further dreams and from observing my own life and the lives of others, I have learned that from 20 to 40, we are supposed to be working to meet the needs of the most fundamental level of life. We must take up the task of providing food, shelter, clothing, and emotional nurture for ourselves and our dependents. This is the time when we establish ourselves in the world, both outwardly in a physical sense and inwardly as a strong ego. Our primary responsibility in these years is to the closest in level of life. The child in us, the one whose needs are met by others, has to step back at age 20, even if his or her own needs were never fully met in the earlier stage. As my dream said, that's tough. It's too late now. We have to get to work meeting our family's needs. Again, put family in quotes. What it means is our closest in, most immediate level of life. Our culture more or less understands the human stages to this point, from birth to 40. The next stage, however, is not in our collective understanding of human life, though most people automatically live into it to some degree. Our culture does know about the midlife crisis that initiates this change. It knows that something happens at this time to shake us up, but it doesn't comprehend its nature. What happens around age 40 is that the human energy value changes again universally from parent to grandparent. Do not think biological reality, although it would be quite reasonable to become a parent at 20 and a grandparent at 40. But think instead of the human energy value of grandparent. By 40, we are supposed to be established. The problems of meeting our most immediate needs are supposed to be solved. It is time now to move up a level and put our shoulders to the wheel of meeting the needs of our time. It is in our 40s that it is natural for us to turn our focus to our communities, to things like church and civic organizations and professional organizations. We each have a contribution to make to the story of our time. The grand in grandparent means big parent, a larger parenting task, a wider playing field. We are still busy meeting the needs of others, but at the next level up from personal family. About the time we get this way of life under our belt, age 60 rolls around, and there is yet another universal change in the kind of human energy flowing into us. Now we are receiving great-grandparent energy. Its purpose is to move us up another level, above even the story of our time. Our culture understands this only as retirement, and to some degree it has that right. In our 60s, we are supposed to retire from the fray. Think of it as moving further up the mountain to a small hut from which we can watch life below but not be involved in it. This retirement, however, is not about taking it easy or playing shuffleboard. It is about turning our energy and our focus to the needs of the ages. At this point, we have already contributed to the story of our time, and our time, in fact, is slipping into the past. Our context now widens, and we begin to think about the generations that have passed and the generations to come. And if we are healthy and whole, we will now have something to contribute to help make a better link between the two. Our whole life until now has prepared us to make this contribution. To give a brief example of this stage, which I think is probably the one that's most unclear to people hearing this, to give a brief example of how it automatically comes upon us, let's look for a moment at what happened to Carl Jung. When he was in his early 60s, he had a serious heart attack. The effect was to take him out of the story of his time. He was no longer strong enough physically to participate very much in the profession of psychiatry. In his enforced retirement, his attention turned to Christianity, to its development through the ages, and to its possible evolution into a fuller, more balanced expression of religious life. Most of his publications for the next 20 years reflected this shift, as did a large part of his personal correspondence. He even said in his autobiography that after his heart attack, he no longer felt that he was living for his own time, but rather that he was living for the ages. The four 20-year stages of human life are just one example of the warp threads that appear universally in everyone's story. Just because we don't know about these threads does not mean that they are not there. In fact, our dreams work very hard to keep us on the broad course of the universal human story. They try to catch us up if we have fallen behind. They try to adjust us to our present stage if we are currently caught up. And they try to prepare us for the change to the next stage. Besides the universal human story, the warp that is fastened onto the loom of our death story also has threads of the universal story of God. These have to do with the mysterious long-term story of divine life, of which we are somehow a part. Our dreams, as Susan showed us yesterday, actually talk to us about the greater story that extends beyond this world of space and time. They bring us insights and understandings about this that can hardly come in any other way unless it be by other depth avenues like visions and meditation experiences. So the warp of our depth story has threads of the universal human story and the universal story of God. Across this warp are woven the woof threads of our personal themes. We each have a personal story, our own unique individual experience, our daily tasks and trials and joys. A large proportion of our dreams are about this part of our story. Other woof threads carry our family story. We are each born from the stories of two other individuals, and each of them came from families who have been carrying particular stories through time. Our dreams know more about the important parts of our family story than we do, and they can tell us about it. Yet another kind of moving woof thread is the story of our time. Our time has a huge effect on our personal story. We are marked by the decades in which we grew up. We arise with that consciousness and live with those time-specific sets of problems and opportunities. At first, our time shapes us, and then later in our lives, we shape it. Our dreams know more about the important parts of this aspect of our story than we do, and they can tell us about it. So our depth story comes into being as the moving woof threads of our personal themes are woven together with the stationary warp threads of universal themes. To illustrate the way dreams clue us into our depth story, I'm going to share with you a few of the dreams that came to me during a single year of my life. This dream that was that year runs from April 3rd, 1991 to April 2nd, 1992. It was the year I turned 44. And I might say how I chose this. I first wrote up that first part that I've just given you, and then I went through my dream journal and looked in my index and just checked off stories that I thought fit those themes. And I didn't go very far because I saw that I had lots of dreams hitting all those themes, and so I just stopped at the year that I knew that you all could connect to somehow, and you'll see what I'm talking about in a moment. So therefore, I just want to tell you that I did not find the dreams first and then construct the introduction. The dreams are really supporting what I said to you up to this point. My dinner party story at that time, April of 1991, had become very impoverished. About the only thing I had to tell was that we were going through a major remodeling of our house while we were living in it. The work had started in January and would go for 6 months. Major reconstruction. But once that topic was covered, I had little more to tell. 7 years earlier, at age 37, I had been struck to the ground, figuratively speaking, by my midlife crisis and had been given, through synchronicity, the writings of Carl Jung to pull me through. But that development, of course, was virtually impossible to talk about at a dinner party, although, God forgive me, don't do it, y'all, but I tried. Take my word for it and just cut that out before you even try it. Before this drastic turn in my life, I had been a writer and had had 4 books published. Dinner parties were easy then, but at my midlife turn, I had to put my writing on hold. It was an imperative from within that I stop writing. When it started at age 37, my midlife turn, I was nearing the end of the parent stage of life and had not yet connected consciously with my inner mother self. Not only did I have no biological children, I didn't want any. My instincts were sleeping. So the years between 37 and 44 had been spent waking up to my instincts so that they could then be sacrificed in the change to the next 20-year stage. None of this could be told at a dinner party, and yet it had occupied my entire life for the last 7 years. I was glad for the wholeness that came with connecting to my instincts, but I wanted some work in the world, something more at the surface of life. All attempts to go back to writing were vetoed from within. So I considered getting trained as a therapist now that I knew all this Jungian stuff. But that was specifically vetoed by a dream that said in words, when I kind of made up my mind one night, that's what I'm going to do. I went to sleep and dreamt this. Be still, be still. It is so rare today for a woman to be still. Take that in, ladies. But being still does not translate into dinner party conversation. So I considered going into the priesthood. But that too was vetoed from within. So here at age 44, I was working hard at the virtue of patience. And I'm telling you this story because when you start on your journey, in fact, there is a 7-year initial period in which you are going to really wonder what it is you're being led to, and you're going to find yourself sitting idly, unable to discern where you're being called, and it really does last 7 years. The 7-year cycles is a whole other thing. All right. Then came a little tidbit for my dinner party story. My parish asked me to become a leader of our Stephen Ministry program, in which I had been a participant for a year or so. Stephen Ministry is a program that trains people to be good listeners and then assigns them to meet regularly with people in the parish who are going through crises as an extension of the pastoral work of the clergy. It's a good idea in principle, But as a program, it doesn't exactly work out as envisioned, mainly because most people going through crises don't want this particular service from lay people. Which makes it hard, though not impossible, to find ministry opportunities for the Stephen ministers. So I was not exactly, and I knew that, and I was not exactly thrilled then at the offer to become one of the people trying to find people for our Stephen ministers to minister to. However, I was impressed that the parish would pay for me to go to St. Louis and stay in a hotel for 2 weeks to be trained. A hotel that had a window that looked out on the arch. It was wonderful. At that point, I had not yet exercised any leadership in the church area. I was a follower only. So I felt that this was at least a move forward, and that it had probably come from God, and that I probably should do it. And no veto came from within. So as this year opens, that's where I was, packing my bags for St. Louis. Just before I left on that trip, I wrote this in my dream journal. And let me note that except for some minor editing, all the Dream Journal excerpts that I'm reading to you today are exactly as I wrote them 15 to 16 years ago. This is April 3rd, 1991. I dreamed a lot last night that is hard to remember now. Not unpleasant dreams, but somewhat difficult and hard to understand. A lot of it was church-related. X figured prominently. At one point, she was saying that she had just gotten her calling. It was as if it had come in on a phone call. She didn't know yet exactly what it was, but she did know that her calling had come through. End of journal entry. My primary association with X was that she was rich, an only child born into a wealthy family. I thought of her primarily as an heiress. So I titled this dream, "The Heiress Gets Her Call." It was good news. There evidently was an heiress in me, and she was getting her call, even though I didn't yet know what it was. So I took heart from this and went on to St. Louis. And sure enough, only a few weeks after returning from that trip, there was a new development. In another context in the parish, I was asked if I would teach a class about the way I was using dreams and synchronicity in my spiritual journey. Now, you would think I would have jumped at the prospect, but I was not at all sure that I could do what was being asked. You all can think about this from our little talk to you yesterday about what you're supposed to go home and do. How could I teach others what had never been taught to me? And take heart from this, you all. I'm the only one here of the speakers who have not been formally trained in any way for this work. How could I teach others what had never been taught to me, what I had simply learned for myself through 7 years of reading Jung and carrying on a dialogue with my copious dream life? I said that I would think about it, and it took a couple of months for me to make up my mind. And in June, I decided that I would do it. I would offer a 12-week class in the fall, and I would call it Natural Spirituality. That was the dinner party story. In the depths, a lot more was going on. On June 26, I recorded this in my dream journal. One theme for a week or more has been my maternal grandmother almost every night. This grandmother as a negative factor. One night, the dream voice said something like, "Now you know to nourish the world, and may the world be open to being nourished." It was said in this high-blown church language like a prayer, and I understood that this was the stage of motherhood, of grandmotherhood, that my maternal grandmother never reached. She only nourished her own blood. I went on to write in my journal, "This is what these dreams have been about, I am now realizing as I write. I have just spent so many years claiming motherhood for myself, and now motherhood as a goal is being passed and left behind. My motherhood is transcending to a higher level for people at large to help other people through the church." Another night, I awoke understanding why the church is called Mother Church. Because the church embodies motherhood at large for the community at large. End of journal entry. So here we can see the woof threads of my family story weaving across the universal threads of the 20-year stages of life. It was my dreams alone that showed me that I was entering a new stage, that my mothering instinct, so recently acquired, now had to be sacrificed and transformed to a higher level. I was not to follow the example set for me by my grandmother. I was to make a change in the family story and bring it back into line with the universal human story. For the next few weeks, my family story continued to arise from the depths. I recorded this in my dream journal on July the 8th. I have so little time for my journal these days. The relentless work on the house, the workmen here at 7:30 every morning, the constant managing and rearranging as they move from room to room. The amazing thing is how absolutely nice our house is becoming. It is a transformation of my outer identity that is total, from shabby and poor-looking to tasteful and well-appointed. I dreamed last night that there was something in the national news about some wealthy, large personages from the past, from the 19th century. A Mr. Rockwood, who was wealthy, bought out a Mr. Granger, who was even more wealthy and substantial. He was, in fact, the essence, almost, the epitome of substantiality. I don't know what the news was exactly, but since these were such substantial national citizens of the past, everyone had followed the story. I decided to let people know that I myself am a Rockwood, a direct descendant of the Mr. Rockwood in the paper. "Look at his picture," I said. "You can see how much I resemble him physically," which was true. He had a distinctive face, kind of craggy, high forehead, high cheekbones, strong jaw. People were surprised to learn of my heritage, my identity. End of journal entry. So here it is beginning to emerge from my depth story that I am indeed an heiress of some kind. Something of especially high quality has come down to me from my father's side of the family. And it is noteworthy to add this synchronicity. The distinctive face of the Mr. Rockwood in the dream was so vivid, this curve of the bones, that I drew that curve in the margin of my journal when I wrote the dream. It stood out in the dream. A year or two later, I saw this face in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It was the face of the Grail Knight, who had been in the cave for centuries guarding the Holy Grail. So at the depth level, I come from a family that has been guarding the Holy Grail, the sacred feminine, through the ages. You can see how much more interesting our depth story is than our dinner party story. I can't tell that at a dinner party. Now, before we go to the next dream, I have to tell you about my paternal grandmother. She was a different kind of grandmother from the other one. At around age 50, she developed arthritis so badly she was confined to her bed for an entire year. Then a Christian Scientist friend healed her. In consequence, she converted to Christian Science and eventually became a Christian Science practitioner. From then on, she spent her time praying people into physical and spiritual health. Consequently, I did not see very much of her as I was growing up. She lived in northern Michigan, and we lived in South Georgia. She seldom came south. She was busy. And we would go north every couple of years and kind of squeeze a visit to her in with the visit to all of our other northern relatives. She died about 10 years before the time of these dreams. On July the 9th, the next night after the Mr. Rockwood dream, I recorded this in my dream journal. I dreamed that I had inherited the Rockwood fortune and estate, and my grandmother Rockwood, who was still alive, heard about it and had a stroke. There's an interpretation for that we're not going into, but that's not as bad as it sounds. She was a great lady and had servants. They felt that she should be taken to where her heir was, and so they put her into the back seat of her car and drove her down here. Her car was an antique one, the same fine car she had always had, a very wealthy and very fine car. Its vintage was about 1930. It was covered on the outside with a reddish-purple plush fabric. It had something of the air of a carriage, although it was definitely a car. It was the kind of true wealth and substance that is seldom seen anymore. I knew that people must have stared at it all the way down the interstate. End of journal entry. Again, you can really see here how much more interesting our story is when the depth level is included. That last dream, along with our house getting finished, evidently inflated me a bit, because the next dream is trying to bring me back to earth. I wrote this in my journal on July the 17th, about a week after that last dream. Today is the last day the workmen will be coming on a regular basis. Last night, I dreamed in words, not images. Now you have come this far, to 40, to the putting in place of this house. It doesn't mean that you know all the rest, what the future holds, what all the answers are. You don't know the other 20. It seems that it was saying, although neither that nor the 40 was explicit. This is just a kind of vague impression I have of what was being said. I understood it very clearly as I was dreaming. End of journal entry. The dream said, now that you have come to 40. A bug just landed on my, right on those words, to 40. Affirmation of what I'm about to say. But I was 44 at the time. It was speaking about a shift in the universal 20-year stages, though I didn't quite get it back then. To paraphrase the dream, it was saying, you did it, about 4 years late, but you did it. You established yourself. You completed the stage from 20 to 40. This new house is the outward symbol. Now comes the next stage, and you don't know what it is. And indeed, I did not. I had signed on to teach a 12-week class. I had no idea it would turn out to be a 20-year endeavor. That was mid-July. September came, and on the Wednesday night after Labor Day, I started teaching the Natural Spirituality Seminar. On September 30th, I wrote in my dream journal, every night I dream dim dreams about my seminar, what I'm teaching in the seminar. It seems to be very important to the unconscious. There is a feeling in the dreams that it is time now for ordinary people to learn about the unconscious and how to follow it. It seems to be something for Episcopalians, especially as the leaders of this development, evidently. All this is vague, but a persistently developing meaning. End of journal entry. So here is a thread of the story of my time weaving its way into my depth story. This dream tells me that I'm helping to contribute to something that is ready to happen in the world at large. I had entered into this natural spirituality seminar with the idea that it would be a one-shot thing. There were, however, some people who had wanted to take the class but had been closed out because I had limited it to 12 participants. So I agreed to offer it again the following spring, but I had no plans beyond that. The idea that we could have a dream group as a follow-up to the class had not yet surfaced. Instead, I was thinking about the possibility of finding some way to make money as a dream counselor. I wanted a real job. I wasn't giving up on this quest for a real job. So my dreams had to set me straight about what my story actually required. On November the 4th, which was about a month before the class was to end, I wrote this in my dream journal. We have just had a 4-day vacation at home instead of going on our trip, the trip that we had planned. We canceled it at the last minute, but we didn't tell anyone. We enjoyed staying home in our new house. Last night I dreamed that I must not continue to rest here. Now that my house, my life, is all nice, I must not think that I can stop here, nor must I continue to keep on with more of the same, adding niceness to niceness. Now I must accept new duties, new service, new suffering. The dream showed an Episcopal bishop resting in niceness in a too nice house and a too nice car and a too nice church. And it showed his wife to be a pinched and drawn-looking woman. That is his starved soul, the dream said. I understood as I awoke that he represented the whole church and the Episcopal church in particular. This dream, then, is warning me not to get caught in the dark side of the story of my time. It says that not even the church knows what this next stage of life is supposed to look like. Once established, we are not supposed to keep on with the activity of the earlier establishment stage. In other words, I did not need a paying job. We had enough money, enough stuff. That was only one of a number of dreams, and I had like a whole series for about a month to get me moved from where I was to where I needed to go. A number of dreams in the final weeks of teaching the class that told me that I had to find a higher level of dedication within myself. And so I did. And in January, we started a weekly dream group, which we called a journey group. This responsibility was now added to my other work as leader of the Stephen Ministry Program. And the teaching of the next Natural Spirituality Seminar was coming up in March. So I was on my way to working full-time for the church without pay. But I was on board with it. It felt good. I was good. After all those dreams, I felt good with it. At this point, my dreams focused on a warp thread from the universal story of God. I recorded this on February 21st, 1992. I dreamed deeply of the negative or dark Christ, also called self. And that's in quotes. Whenever I put anything in quotes in my dream journal, it means that was what the dream said. Negative or dark Christ, also called self. Of what it is. Here's what the negative or dark Christ is, or the negative or dark self. The dream was more of a mood or perception of that kind of dark energy with this label on it. I was aware of a brooding, turbulent sky. Then I saw two doves flying up into the dark heavens, bound to earth by long tethers about their necks. They had flown to the end of their tethers and were straining against them. I understood that the dark Christ, or the dark self, is the resentment or protest of the self against these bonds. End of journal entry. If you think about that, it's very powerful. It's saying all evil in the world really comes out of our resentment of things not being perfect. This dream says that the same part of us that seeks God, the same part of us that seeks God, that has that sense of perfection and is reaching for it, also has a tendency to go dark when faced with the limitations of earthly life. This is given as a matter-of-fact teaching that seems to be showing a universal truth. There is nothing in the dream that points to how it applies to me in particular, although, of course, it did apply, as all universal truths do. A month later, however, I had a dream that wove this particular theme into my personal story. This is what I wrote in my journal. I dreamed that a dove, the dove, was down with us on earth, reconciled to earth life, and we were putting it in place in our house, sort of hanging it like a picture in a narrow space between two doors. It felt good, and I was aware that it was the redemption of the dark self in me. End of journal entry. That was March 26th. Remember that we began this series of dreams a year earlier on April the 3rd as I was setting out for St. Louis. That first dream was that the heiress had gotten her calling, though she did not yet know what it was. Now, exactly a year later, on April 2, 1992, I wrote this in my dream journal. My seminar felt a little rough last night. I knew it would before it started. I felt a little rough, a little off. But I dreamed last night that the seminar is going very well, that these people are getting underway on significant journeys and that a new journey group is coming into being. I can't remember the images or language of the dream, but the sense was that this Wednesday night business is taking hold and bearing fruit. End of journal entry. A lot had happened in a year. In fact, more had been given to me during that time than I was able to take in. So as I have been working through these dreams for this talk, they have continued to add even more to my depth story, which is why you need to write your dreams down and go back from time to time and read your old dream journals, because you get more as you go back. First of all, I have learned more about the 20-year stages of human life. Back in 1991, I didn't get it that some of these dreams were trying to tell me about universal stages that tick off every 20 years for everybody. In the following years, however, I did begin to intuit the existence of such stages in relation to the quaternity that I present in my Natural Spirituality book. But I only understood them in terms of the qualities that characterize each of the four quarters of my quaternity. And that, in fact, was how I started writing this talk, with that understanding. It was only in revisiting these dreams for this talk that I began to notice that they were telling me that at age 44, I had come to 40. And now I had to choose the right grandmother to follow. I had come to my grandmother stage. And they were also telling me that with the extensive remodeling of my house, I was established, and I must not keep on adding more and more to my establishment. And so a new understanding of the four stages has now come up for me, and instead of describing them to you as I first intended to do in terms of the quaternity in my book, which would have been a lot harder to do and been a lot more complicated, I pegged them instead to the human generations, child, parent, grandparent, and great-grandparent. More meaningful to me personally, however, is a new thread of my family story that appeared as I was working on this talk. I got to wondering about Christian Science. My grandmother never talked about it, and I never had enough interest to inquire into it. I knew no more than what I'd read in the newspaper about Christian Science. Somebody's child had died because they didn't take it to the doctor. But as I was typing up that dream about her antique car, I suddenly got curious and I Googled Christian Science. Within 10 minutes, I understood, at least in part, why the dream said that she was so rich and that I, in taking on natural spirituality, was her heir. Christian Science arose in the 19th century. Remember, Mr. Rockwood was back there too. It is truly antique relative to our consciousness here today. But at the time in which it arose, it was amazingly progressive. Christian Science understands that we are subject to divine laws of being that are as regular and discoverable as those of any science. To learn about these laws and come into harmony with them and thereby gain physical and spiritual health, we have to let our consciousness, and they use that word consciousness, be corrected from error by understandings that come to us individually from the Christ, or from truth with a capital T. Christian Science understands that Jesus and the Christ are not exactly the same thing. Jesus revealed the Christ to us, which is not bad for 1875. In its own time, Christian Science was breaking open the box, making some room for an expansion of Christian understanding. I can now see better than I could when I had that dream that I truly am, spiritually speaking, my grandmother Rockwood's heir. With stories like this going on in our depths, we need much less from movies and television and the nightly news. We never have to fear that silence or stillness will reveal to us a lack of meaning in our lives. Every morning we wake up to look to see what page we are on in this never-endingly interesting story of ours. And when we gather together in dream groups, we experience Christian community in a way we never have before. Remember that people relate primarily through shared stories. When you share your depth story with others, you bond truly and deeply. Everyone is interesting. And you care about the next installment of every story. That is why our journey group is still going strong after 14 years. I would suggest to you that because of the sharing of depth stories, a church dream group is, in practice, a very high form of Eucharist. This suggestion is based not only on personal experience, but on a dream I had about giving thanks to God. I'm sure you know that Eucharist, the word, comes from the Greek word for thanksgiving or gratitude. This is the dream as I recorded it in my dream journal. This was on July the 16th, 1990, 9 months before the cycle of dreams that I have shared with you here today. This is the dream. My dream last night had to do with the understanding that the real way to show gratitude to God, to glorify Him, to thank Him, is to experience spirit in your life and tell your story. This is the true way to relate to God, to tell one's story of one's experience with God. This is why we need dream groups in our churches, many, many dream groups, so that we can tell each other the whole story of our experience of God and share a Eucharist at a level that might well be deeper than any other.